This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03 Wednesday afternoon, October 9th. Good afternoon. Thank you for joining us on the Noon Business Hour. I'm Rob Hart. A couple of stories we're following today. Let's start off with the latest involving Hurricane Milton, which is expected to make landfall in Florida tonight in an area that is yet to have recovered from Hurricane Helene. And in a couple of minutes, we will get a report from financial journalist Tom Hudson. You have heard him on the Noon Business Hour many times. He is based in Miami, Florida, and he will give us the perspective on what is happening in the state. Hurricane Milton is in the Gulf of Mexico. It is going to strike the Gulf Coast of Florida. And based on the track of this storm, it is expected now to hit Florida somewhere between Tampa and Sarasota, and it could make landfall as a Category 5, which is a very rare occurrence, and could be the first time a Cat 5 has hit the state of Florida since 2018, Hurricane Michael coming ashore in Florida as a Category 5. So we'll get Tom's perspective on the preparation coming up in just a couple of minutes. We also want to talk about travel today. Day two as well. Disneyland raising the price of tickets on its most in-demand days. Let's discuss the move and what it might mean for the company's other parks with Ken Leon, Director of Equity Research at CFRA Research in New York. Ken, thank you for joining us today. And let's talk about the changing of the pricing structure at Disneyland. This is Anaheim, California. And what can you expect if you want to go to Disneyland on especially busy days?
So prices have gone up, and specific to Disneyland, that was their premium lightning lamp pass. But we have seen price increases planned for 2025 in the ballpark of 8 to 10%. Not only, you know, Disneyland is California, but Disney World in Orlando and perhaps in their international parks. The question is, obviously, it's a pain point for consumers who might be suffering because of inflation. But then for Disney, this is their most profitable business segment as they try to figure out their other business, which is moving to video streaming.
I was going to ask, what is the logic here? I mean, obviously, Disney would not increase the prices for certain days at Disneyland if they did not believe that the public would be willing to pay them. As you point out, is this an attempt to subsidize other areas of Disney that may not be doing especially well? Or is this still an attempt to make up for the money that was lost during the park shutdowns in 2020 and 21?
Sure, it's a great question. Experience is the segment, and parks is the largest part of that. Cruise lines is second. In the past quarter, revenues were only up 2%. Operating income was down 3%. And the stock was down, mostly because they said that there might be some ease in traffic to the parks. There was worries about the recession or soft economy. So as an investor, you really have two scenarios. The bull case would be perhaps they have confidence the economy is going to be better next year, and certainly parts of their customer base can absorb that price increase as they've increased costs on labor, et cetera. The bear case might be that revenues aren't as strong as they'd like or traffic, so the only way that you can get some kind of pickup would be on price. And that's really what analysts will have to figure out when Disney reports in early November.
Ken Leon, Director of Equity Research at CFRA Research in New York, thank you for joining us today. Coming up next, we will go to Miami and see how the Sunshine State is preparing for the Category 5 Hurricane Milton, which could make landfall later this evening.
Lunch money for all generations. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Hurricane Milton is expected to make landfall on the Gulf Coast of Florida tonight in an area that is yet to recover from Hurricane Helene. Joining us now on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Tom Hudson, financial journalist based in Miami. Now, Tom, you're in an entirely different part of the state compared to the Gulf Coast of Florida. Landfall expected now somewhere between Tampa and Sarasota on the west side of the state. But this is a monster storm. And even in Miami, you are going to experience some evidence of Milton's wrath.
Indeed, we will. Certainly in the Palm Beach County and Broward County, which is where Fort Lauderdale is, and those areas to our north on the Atlantic side of the coast. But it is absolutely, Rob, this is a Gulf Coast event. And I know how important that is for a lot of folks in the Chicagoland area who may have family, who have retired or live part-time or maybe full-time in the Sarasota area, Fort Myers, Clearwater, St. Pete, Tampa area. It's very popular, as you know, amongst some of us who are former Midwesterners to enjoy the Sunshine State. This is going to be devastating. It is a Category 4 storm right now. It is expected to slow down slightly in the speed of the storm, and that's going to expand the wind field, meaning that the hurricane force winds over 79 miles an hour, tropical storm force winds over 39 miles an hour are going to hit a wider space across the state of Florida.
And Milton could have the distinction of being one of a handful of hurricanes to strike the continental U.S. As a Category 5. Hurricane Andrew, of course, hit the Miami area in August of 1992 as a Cat 5, but it took years to rebuild from that particular storm. Right now, we're getting stories of, you can see on social media, you can see pictures of the Publix down to the shelves, the big supermarket chain in Florida, gas stations out of gas, airports shutting down, theme parks shutting down as the entire state rides out this storm. How does an evacuation like this take place? If you want to get out of town, are you basically too late at this point?
Well, it depends on how well prepared you are to leave. We've had friends who are in the Sarasota area who decided to leave early this morning before sunrise. And they now are safely in Southeast Florida. I've had some colleagues in journalism who were ready to camp out in St. Petersburg, ready for this thing to come up the Tampa Bay region, who decided to leave this morning to evacuate inland. You know, the messaging of evacuation has changed over the past many years. It used to be get as far away from the storm as possible. Now evacuation could be just a few dozen miles outside of particularly the wrath of the storm surge. And that's the real important part. I've got friends and family who live east of I-75, which is the main interstate going south out of Tampa, who have evacuated to lived west of 75, so toward the Gulf Coast, who have evacuated to friends' houses just east of I-75 to just get out of the way of that very dangerous and lethal storm surge.
You talk about the Midwesterners who may have vacation homes on the Gulf Coast of Florida. They may be snowbirds, and they go down to those vacation homes starting October, November, and then come back in April and May. Town, you know, Marco Island, Naples, Florida. Yep. You know, people who live in Ave Maria, which is down the road just a ways. Even if you survive the storm, the process of rebuilding is a long one and can cost you a lot of money.
Yeah. Yeah. This is going to be a multi-billion-dollar event, this storm, on top of what was several hundred million dollars, if not over $1 billion event with Hurricane Helene just 2 weeks ago. And, you know, some of those losses are going to be insured, no doubt about it. Many of those losses, however, are not insured because the water damage, the flood damage, oftentimes in Florida, folks are not carrying flood insurance. It is the state with the highest number of flood insurance policies, but still only a fraction of those who need those policies have those policies. And for those retirees who may own their home or condominium or getaway snowbird place outright, they may not think there's any need, regulatorily speaking, for flood insurance. But yet that regular homeowner's insurance is not going to cover that storm surge from Helene and certainly not from Milton.
Well, good luck to everybody involved. Tom Hudson, financial journalist in Miami, thank you for joining us today. Coming up on the Noon Business Hour, we'll talk about that cyber attack against America's largest water company and what that means for our critical infrastructure.
Cash, credit, debit, and totally free. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
New Jersey-based American Water, the largest water utility in the U.S., says it was targeted by hackers. Let's take a closer look with Adam Levin, founder of Cyber Scout, host of the podcast What the Hack with Adam Levin, and author of the book Swiped, based in Nashville, Tennessee. Adam, thank you for joining us today. The hackers, the American Water says it was the target of a cyber attack. How successful was it?
Well, they don't really know so far, but what they did was they shut down their billing department, which I'm sure makes every water customer happy, but they shut it down. They said people will not get late fees or things like that. But, you know, this is just another example of how critical infrastructure is being targeted by foreign countries. We don't know yet where this hack came from, but, for instance, in February, the FBI warned Congress that Chinese hackers were penetrating deeply into U.S. critical infrastructure to cause damage. Water treatment plants, electric grid, transportation systems, other critical infrastructure. The EPA issued an alert saying that 70% of water systems inspected don't fully comply with requirements of the Safe Water Drinking Act. And they were saying there were some alarming cybersecurity vulnerabilities, like default passwords that haven't been updated, vulnerable single login steps, former employees that still had access to systems. We had on our show recently Jen Easterly, who's the director of the Cybersecurity Infrastructure and Safety Agency, talking about how they're working very hard with all elements of critical infrastructure in order to make America more immune to these kinds of attacks.
Now, on the one hand, you could say this is a somewhat of a success story because the cyber attack was detected and American Water could take some proactive steps to stay ahead of the problem. On the other hand, which you point out, is that the hackers have the ability to jiggle a billion doorknobs and one will eventually open.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, give you some examples. In 2013, the command and control system of a small dam in upstate New York. Someone noticed that it was as if someone was trying to open the sluice gates. Lucky for them, the sluice gates were under maintenance, so they were disconnected at the time. You had the Colonial Pipeline incident, where now that was a ransomware attack, where they had a shutdown. They originally were attacked from their business systems, and they ended up shutting down the pipeline for several days, which caused price increases, lines at gas stations. And then you had a terrifying attack not too long ago in Oldsmar, Florida, where a treatment plant, someone noticed that the level of lye was increasing, which could have caused a health disaster in that city. So we have to understand we are under attack, and there are many elements of the critical infrastructure that are not properly resourced and not properly trained, and that's why the federal government has launched an all-out effort to coordinate a public-private partnership in order to try to get this under control and make us a harder target.
Adam Levin, founder of Cyber Scout in Nashville, Tennessee, thank you for joining us today. Still ahead in Personal Finance Wednesday, a strong reason not to cash out your 401k retirement account.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. Florida braces for its second hurricane in 2 weeks. Trustees don't attend a suburban township meeting, saying they fear for their safety. Personal Finance Wednesday strategies for maximizing your 401k retirement account. And when negotiating with an employer, it's important to think beyond just the salary. WBBM Business, the markets are higher. The Dow is up 384 points. The NASDAQ is up 77. The S&P 500 up 32. We have 68 degrees right now in Chicago under mostly sunny skies, going up to 72. It's 12:31, topping our news at the half hour. Hurricane Milton has dropped back to a Category 4 storm as it moves towards Florida's west coast. The National Hurricane Center predicted it would likely weaken but remain a major hurricane when it makes landfall in the Tampa Bay area late tonight or early tomorrow. Deanne Criswell is the administrator of the Federal Emergency Management Agency.
Yes, this is going to be hard. Two massive storms have come our way in only a matter of weeks. But this is what we do. FEMA is ready. We are here to help people. We are here to save lives. And that is exactly what we are postured to do.
The Tampa area has avoided a direct hurricane hit for more than a century. Last night's scheduled meeting of the Thornton Township featured Supervisor Tiffany Henyard, but no other members of the Board of Trustees. They've expressed concerns about safety after multiple out-of-control public sessions. Henyard implied the lack of attendance was a stall tactic by the board. She also spoke about what she says was a nine-point-something, her words, million-dollar surplus in the Thornton Township fund. WBBM News Time 12:32 as the noon business hour continues. Markets are higher. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Michael Palumbo, founder of MJP Capital and author of the book Calculated Risk, based in Chicago. Michael, thank you for joining us today. And the markets are poised for their second straight day of gains. And is it safe to say that the markets have managed to shake off the October doldrums?
Yeah, well, we started off with a pretty rocky October, and as you said, the last couple of days erased all those, and we're sitting here again, as I was on last time about a week and a half ago, at all-time highs again. So, you know, it seems like they want to keep, you know, knocking the market down, but it keeps standing up again and hitting new highs.
And what are some of the things that could be potential market movers going forward? I mean, we're going to be in the teeth of earnings season before too long. Those third quarter earnings reports. What are investors looking for?
So, in our opinion, we're sitting at pretty much full valuation here, and there's a lot of risks out there. So, we got CPI and PPI coming out tomorrow and Friday. That could show a reignition of inflation. We have bond yields that have been rising. So the 30-year is now, you know, over 4%. The 10-year is right at 4. You've got geopolitical risks. You got the U.S. elections coming up. And then you've got, as you said, corporate earnings coming up over the next 3 to 4 weeks. So there's a ton of risk out there. The question is, does any of it actually happen? And, you know, the bull case is that everything's going to be fine. We're sitting at a forward PE of 21 in the S&P 500. That's pretty rich. But the bulls are saying, hey, earnings growth is going to continue to be 10 to 20%. Yields are going to stay reasonable. The Fed is now dovish. Geopolitical risks are overblown. And that is so far playing out to be true. But just because it's the most likely scenario going forward does not mean that you should just be super long here, because it is a very risky situation where any one of those things could knock the market down 10, 20% if it doesn't come true. If bond yields start to rise, if geopolitical risks are worse, you know, the U.S. election coming up, if corporate earnings happen to hiccup, you know, here at all. So I caution investors to be a little bit more in cash than they normally would be, because at this point in valuations, it's dangerous to be super long.
On the other hand, I think this is something that's pretty remarkable, and that is since the bull run began at the end of 2022, all of those risks that you mention have been present the entire time, and yet the investors managed to shrug it off each and every time. And is it simply a function of they look at everything else happening in the world and then just look at the job market and look at consumer spending and say, that's more important?
Well, that's true, but there's a difference between a market where the S&P is 5,000 and we're looking at forward earnings at like 19 or 20. We're now at 5,700 plus, and now the forward P is 21. I mean, trees can't grow to the moon. and so at some point, we're getting to where valuations are so full that the risk reward starts to tilt side of more caution. And I'm saying that that's where we're at right here. Now, if you take that position, you are likely to miss out a little bit on further rally. But I've always said it's okay to underperform in a super bull market that's extended. When it's not okay is to underperform on a big bear market correction, which is a possibility here. So, I mean, you could be blown up if you're super long in a bear market. The worst thing that can happen if you're exposed to stocks right now is you're going to miss a little bit of this rally. I just think that it's tilted too much to where you need caution right here.
Michael Palumbo, founder of MJP Capital, author of the book Calculated Risk in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next in Personal Finance Wednesday, avoiding a huge mistake with your 401k.
Cashing in with conversation. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Personal Finance Wednesday, and in this segment, the focus is on 401k retirement accounts and making sure you get the most out of them. Let's tap the expertise of Sherry Greco-Rikus, co-founder of Rappaport-Rikus Capital Management in Chicago, author of the book Maximize Your Return on Life. Sherry, thank you for joining us today. And one thing that we discuss with great regularity on this show is touching your 401k before you retire should be an in case of emergency break glass last resort kind of move. But for a lot of other people, they see it as just a source of cash.
Exactly. And before I talk about cashing out of the 401k, I want to make sure your listeners, especially your young listeners, are opting into the 401k and making sure that you get at least, if your company has a match, which means they will match what you put in, to put into the 401k. So it's such a great way to start saving. So let's talk about that was cashing, putting money into the 401k, which is a huge benefit. But let's talk about what happens when you switch jobs. And people switch jobs on average 9 times. I just read about that. But there's 3 options. One is you can just keep it in the current company 401k. But if you've only been there a year and it's a small amount, I can't tell you how many of my clients forget about those small 401ks. So I really wouldn't advocate keeping it in your old company 401k. You can roll it into an IRA, or you can roll it into your new job 401k as well. But the last option, as you mentioned, is cashing out. And there is a lot of disadvantages. And what I mean by cashing out is taking money from your 401k and either spending it or putting into your regular bank account. That's called cashing out. And there's a study with Vanguard that 33% do cash out. A Yale study says 40% cash out, and it's usually younger workers that have less than $25,000. So, listeners, let's see if we can reduce those percentages. Do not cash out, and I'll explain why in a moment.
Now, what are some of the scenarios in which people cash out? Is it someone, they find themselves in a tight spot, and they go into their primary retirement account? That's where all the 401k account, where everything is, and start pulling money out of that to pay essential expenses? Or is it they discovered they had a 401k account from an old job that's just been sitting there, and they decide to cash that out as opposed to rolling it over into the 401k account that you have for your current job?
You know, I think it's all of the above. And the problem people get into, and you and I have talked about this over and over again, is you need to live within your means all the time so that you don't touch these retirement assets. And sometimes, you know, you'll see an old statement will come and you think it's like found money. And instead of rolling it into another IRA or another company plan, you're like, oh, I'll just cash it out. But that can be very, very costly, because if you're under 59 and a half, there's a 10% penalty. And any money that you take out of that 401k becomes ordinary income and it's taxed to you in that year. So, you know, just a simple example, if you pull out a $15,000 401k or IRA and cash that out, doesn't sound like a lot. But if you're in like the 22% bracket, that's a little over $3,000. You have your 10% penalty, that's $1,500. So you're now losing $4,800 of that $15,000. So you immediately lost that money to taxes. You also are losing the potential growth. You know, these 401ks grow tax deferred. So you'll be able to grow that without paying taxes annually. And over time, you know, if you're young and you have a 30-year horizon at, you know, a 6 or 7% return, that could be hundreds of thousands of dollars by just keeping that money in the 401k. And so that those are just two big disadvantages of cashing out.
And then very quickly, Sherry, you mentioned live within your means. So let's say you decide to raise your means by getting a new job. A lot of people, once they get that new job, they don't give their retirement plan the TLC it deserves. And as a result, their saving rate could be lower than the job they left.
Oh, exactly. And that's a really, really good point. First of all, sometimes a new job will have a waiting period, so you can't get in right away anyway. But you must understand, because some companies have like an auto minimum deposit, and so you think you're participating because money's coming out of your paycheck, but you actually could be giving more. So make sure that you understand the plan and also that you take advantage of any match. So if they're willing to match 3%, at a minimum, you should be putting in 3%. That's free money. You don't want to give that match up. And also take care on your investment choices. I really advocate, if you aren't sophisticated and you don't want to spend a lot of time, you could do something called an age-based investment. So it's based on your age, based on your retirement. You don't have to think about it. It has an allocation, and it continues the allocation. As you get older, it'll be more conservative. So understand the plan, understand the match, take advantage of it, know how much you're putting in, and make the right investment decision.
Sherry Greco-Rikas, thank you for joining us today.
Money conversation that pays a big dividend. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Personal Finance Wednesday rolls on. When you're looking for a new job, salary is probably top of mind, but there are some other important things to consider. We're joined by Rick Cobb, founder of the workplace consulting firm 2Discern in Chicago. Rick, thank you for joining us today, and you would be the first to know that there is always an art to salary negotiation. And the last thing the company wants to do, even if it's great, is give you more money. So how can you make that up in other ways?
Well, let's be clear, though. Make sure that you have the offer before you try any of this, because if you don't have the offer in hand, you're negotiating with yourself. Now, that having said that, you can look at title. If you're coming from a position to a new job, and the title, it does not align with the one that you had previously, I think it makes sense to try and negotiate that. So, you know, I know that this title is X. You know, for the last 3 years, I've been operating at Y. I'd like you to consider the idea of making that title a part of my employment.
So basically just saying, in lieu of, you know, tens of thousands of dollars into my compensation package, just slap the word senior on whatever it is I'm doing.
Well, you have to be careful about this. Obviously, you don't want to get a title in exchange for compensation. I'm really talking about after you've sort of run your course on what the comp ranges are. You're going to know, because They have a range they're working at. You can ask for that range. That should happen before we get into these parts. I guess what we're saying here is don't stop negotiating even after your compensation settled. And that's the title. But the title in exchange for money is a bad move. You know, you can, the one nice thing is, though, if it's free to the employer and they give you a title because it doesn't cost them anything, it does fit into the future compensation ranges, because if you're a VP at a director level, then it's a lot harder to keep you from getting a raise. Another thing to look at is if you can't get that right away, either the compensation isn't what you want it to be, or you feel like the title doesn't align with what you're able to do and what you were doing before, I think that you ask for an opportunity to review that after they've had a chance to see what you're capable of. You know, it's, can we agree that after 3 months, we can sit down and talk about this again and discuss perhaps adjusting the compensation and or title, whatever your issue is.
Rick Cobb, founder of the workplace consulting firm To Discern in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.